Okay, here we go. Another edition of Addiction and Redemption. Episode 33, I believe. Yahoo! The last edition was released on Christmas, and today's the 29th. So I gave you two episodes on Christmas for those of you who are faithfully listening. And we're just going to keep it going. And if I can figure out how to do this GarageBand edit thing, there'll actually be a song at the end of this podcast that it transitions out into about heroin that I actually recorded years ago. I wrote it like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and it's a really dark song, and it had this really poor sound quality. I just recorded it into a computer without even a microphone on like this piece of shit acoustic guitar. But I found it on an old iPod today that I discovered that I'd lost like years ago. I found the iPod in a drawer, and it only worked on shuffle, and I plugged it in, and this song was playing. So what I did was I took the microphone that I talked the podcast into, and I just cupped my, the headphones. Actually, the iPod was playing through the headphones, and I cupped the headphones around the microphone that I used to record my podcasts, and it came out sounding really cool and kind of like dark and weird and disturbing as fuck. It's a song about heroin, and if you can listen to the words, they're disturbing at best. It's like, I saw you just the other day in the shadows of my neighborhood. You won't go away. I saw you just the other day killing a junkie and taking his money. And then it's just goes into, you were my American dream lost on Chicago streets. You were my American dream lost on my hometown scene. It's a pretty fucked up song. I can't believe I wrote it. And this was probably 6 years sober that I wrote it. So anyway, speaking of sobriety, we're getting there. We're getting there. So just bear with me. I don't know if people will listen to the podcast once it gets good because people just like the gory stuff. I've probably said that before. But anyway, thanks again for listening. So we left off, it's winter. And it's almost like, you know, winter is associated as the season of death, right? It's like the season where everything dies or goes into hibernation. And I really felt that this is the point at which I started to just feel spiritually dead. Just completely and totally just so lost and just so frigid and just so icy. It's like my soul was just ice. It had just turned to like freezingness. It's like these evil little ice particles taking over the inside of me. Those of you who have lived through Chicago winters know what it's like. And it was just a really cold winter. And it just, I don't know what was happening. All I know is that it was cold. And I would go down, you know, by this point, by like January, February, like the last story I told about being kind of wandering around the city late at night, the hood late at night, was, I want to say that was maybe January, something like that. I couldn't even really tell you. But I had this job that I mentioned. I had this job working in this little restaurant. And so I had that as like this sort of stable thing. But by like mid-January, I was just full-blown alcoholic junkie. And there was really no turning back. And I want to start talking about the messengers, like who started to appear. And I had gone to this psychiatrist who was, there was something kind of slimy about him, and he would give me these meds, and they weren't like fun meds. There was nothing fun about them, but he would give me these meds, and I guess they sort of kind of helped. But more importantly, he referred me to this guy named Mike Sullivan, who was a therapist in Lombard. And I started going to see Mike Sullivan, I want to say it was in the wintertime. And I also mentioned going to these fellowship meetings. And there was a woman named Mary who I met in probably like November, somewhere around the time I got out of the jail debacle, as that was happening. Right after that, I kind of befriended her, and I kind of knew her beforehand too. There was this guy, Chris. So there's Chris, Mary, and now there's this Mike Sullivan guy. There's this other guy I went to high school with named Pat. And there's these people, they're starting to show up in my experience. Now, I would go to see this guy, Mike Sullivan, And he would basically just tell me, you have to go to treatment for a long time. And I like didn't want to go to treatment. Nobody wants to go to treatment because treatment sucks. And he's like, you need long-term treatment. And this other woman, Mary, told me about this place that her son went that was like a six-month deal. It was in Palos Heights, and you went there for like 6 months, and you lived on a farm, and you just did this like farm thing. And I was like, I don't want to live on a farm, you know? And then it's like, versus what? What do you want to do? Well, I want to like live in my parents' basement and shoot dope. And like, that's really what I wanted to do. And so now we're getting into what it means to surrender. Because if you surrender this thing, if you give up the fight, that means you have to take on this whole new fight, which involves like, it would maybe involve like shoveling shit out of a horse stall. You know, that's what that might be. But that's actually what surrender is. So in continuing to fight this battle, there's another battle I'm going to have to embrace. And I'm just so disturbingly and sickeningly comfortable with where I'm at. And this Sullivan guy, I would go see him, and we would do these like kind of like therapy sessions, but it was really just like he would just tell me what I needed to do to get clean, and I would just try to argue with him that I didn't need that. But he just was there for me. And he was a Vietnam vet, and half the time I was fascinated by hearing these Vietnam stories, and he would tell me what it was like to be in combat. He was an infantryman. He would tell me what it was like to be in combat, and then he would tell me what it was like to be locked up in like LA County jail, and he just had these war stories, and he'd been sober like, I don't know, 30 or 40 years, some ridiculous amount of time. And he would listen to me. He understood me, but he would also be telling me very sternly what I needed to do. And there was at some point, I think it was more towards the spring, but he organized this like intervention with my mom and basically like called me and my mom and him in there. And he came to the door and I just wanted to storm in and not even let my mom in. And he gave me this look like you dick. And it was this like, it was this little smidgen of like, can you see what an asshole you're being for just a second? I like caught his eye looking at the way that I was like dismissive of my mother in front of him. And I was kind of like, oh. And so he somehow got me onto this waiting list for this place in Woodridge that was called Cornell Interventions. And I'm not sure what the timeline was. As I've said a few times, it's all really blurry here. But my point is that there's people starting to show up in my experience who are sort of like aids. They're like little messengers. They're like little speakers of truth. They're like imparting these little bits of wisdom. And I'm so fucked up that I can't help but not listen to some of them. I have to listen to some of them because I'm like, I'm so annihilated that like my defenses are not always up. They're just not. And I have to take in some of this information. Now, my trips to the West Side were like every day. I mean, it was like every day I would wake up and then I would, if I had enough money, I would go to this liquor store that opened at like 9, this liquor store, Malloy's, and I would buy liquor and then I would drink the liquor and then I would like drive to, then I would walk to the train and then I would take the city down. And by the time I got to the city, I was often throwing up. There was a wine store downtown I would sometimes sneak into and steal bottles of wine from. I think I only did it once or twice. And then I would also take my backpack to Trader Joe's in the morning and put like 2 bottles of wine in it and just walk out. They don't have very good security there. And this was my life. It was like wake up, get liquor, get money, and go down. And I can't remember what I would do. Like I would run out, if I made money at the restaurant, I would be out of that money by that night or the next night. And so I didn't know how to like some, I don't remember exactly what I did to get money. But I got it almost every single day. And so it just became like this full time job. Like by, let's say mid February, it's just a full time job. And one of the spots that I would go to kind of shut down. It like wasn't as good as it used to be. And at some point I ran into this guy from high school named David. I ran into him at the train and he was like a notorious old school junkie who had like gone to prison. And he like got his shit together. And so now he just used it once in a while, but he saw me. And so then he would kind of use me to make runs for him. He would like buy me a bag, but he would like buy me a bag to go in and get him like two bags so that he wouldn't have to run the risk. And he introduced me to this other guy, Matt, and we went to this new spot that was just across the of Austin. I believe it was Austin Boulevard from Oak Park. So Oak Park's on one side and Austin's on, and the Chicago is on the other, literally walking down the dividing line. And when you walk down the dividing line between Oak Park and the west side, it's a very, very, very clear division. And so you would have to get off the red line, or the green line, I believe, at Austin from the Oak Park train station. It was like two stops. And then you would have to walk like maybe four or five blocks. Now, I should mention I also had this really zippy, badass little skateboard. And I would use the skateboard because it would get me into the spot. But this guy, Matt, introduced me to this other crew of people that sold dope just barely across the border, maybe like two or three blocks east of Oak Park. And so I started going to this new spot. Now, this new spot was different because sometimes you had to go inside to this building. And it's just amazing the contrast between white America and black America just being that one dividing line. You know, because you get two blocks in. You get two blocks into black America, and it is a different world. It is a different world all together. And it was just, I had to kind of go deeper into it, but I felt almost more comfortable going into this neighborhood, like at night. It was just maybe a tad bit friendlier, even though it was still super sketchy. And it's almost like I thought these guys were my friends. I think I've mentioned that before. They were not my friends. Some bad people. This is a bad neighborhood. But this is kind of like the mix and the mashup of what was happening by, you know, early 2007, like January, maybe February 2007. Just picture freezing cold, ice in my veins, and the dead of winter, and just this sort of wandering desperation, and just this just getting more and more lost. I mean, I remember there was this one day where I would go cop in this new spot. I would go, copping means buy, by the way. I would go dope in this new spot. And I couldn't even, I would get like two bags or three bags or whatever it was. And I wouldn't even be able to get out of the alleyway before I'd have to like use a little garbage can and spill some out in a garbage can and like sniff it up. And there was one time where I like ducked down into this like snow pile and I tried to like get it into a spoon to shoot it. And it was, it just like kind of like spilled all over, and I basically like wasted the whole thing. But my point is I couldn't even wait to get back to the train station or to Oak Park to use the Starbucks bathroom. I had to like try to crouch down in the snow and do it. And like a cop could have driven by and I just would have been arrested. And this is just the powerlessness of it again. This is the powerlessness. You know, you could call it weakness or whatever you want to call it, but I was fucked. And I remember like trying to use snow and melting the snow in the spoon, because what you do is you put the water in the spoon and then you mix the dope with it and then you cook it up with a lighter and it fizzles. And I was trying to use the like dirty snow to be the water, you know, and trying to melt it, and it just didn't work. And I'll probably do a separate episode here on just exactly what shooting is all about. It's just disgusting. But it wouldn't work. And so I'm just like more lost and more desperate and sometimes needing it so bad that I try to do it too soon and then I ruin it and then I need more, but I can't afford more. So I have to wait another like 24 hours or something, or go get drunk or get drunker or try to get some pills or something. And this is, see, if you just listen to the way I'm talking, it's just all mixed up. And there's also some people who are here to help me kind of mixed in with it as well. And it's just all fucked. It's just all fucked. And this is my life. And it's just getting further and further and further and further and further. It's just going rather further and further and further and further downhill. Further and further towards something I was not meant to experience, but that I was because I did. So thanks for listening. Hang tough. I'm going to try to transition this into a song that I wrote.
I saw you just the other day in the shadows of my neighborhood. You won't go away. I saw you just the other day killing a junkie and taking his money. I saw you just the other day in the eyes of a desperate slave. And I heard you just the other day in the words of an Elliott Smith song without a happy ending. Chicago streets, you were my American dream, lost on the West Side scene, making enemies. And I loved you, I loved you, I loved you, I loved you to the end. I saw you just the other day of a teenage girl while I was getting on the train. I saw you just the other day in the life of a friend who was dying but has been resurrected. And you were my American dream, lost on Chicago streets. You were my American dream, lost on my hometown scene, killing my family. And I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you till the end. Sent me straight to hell. Sweet mother heroin, you were my only friend, and you almost sent me straight to hell. And sometimes I just want a little bit more of your delicious poison, magic and delicious, wonderful evil, and just one more stick, just one more stick of your delicious, wonderful evil in my blood and into my vein and into my soul. Mixing everything up, evil and delicious and wonderful, evil and delicious and wonderful. Because you